Hi, my name is Monique Johnson. Thank you for listening to SITREP NYC. This month, we're going to be focusing on women in the military. So this week's episode is focusing on the experience of being a mom and balancing motherhood with our military obligations and service and how it affects our mental health and our physical health.
I hope that the women who came and shared their stories are well-received, understanding that everybody's experience is different, and though, you know, you personally as a listener may have not experienced what they're speaking of, just respecting their story, respecting their truth. And I hope that that is the sentiment that's shared across this series, that we respect the experience and the stories that were shared, because they're often not. We often don't get to take a glimpse into someone's story, especially this intense, you know, and this such a vulnerable atmosphere. So I'm just so honored that the women that came and interviewed opened up, and we captured that in the series. And I hope that the listener can see that.
I joined the military in 2000, May of 2000, before there was any September 11th or anything like that.
Serene Renee, United States Air Force veteran.
I joined really to get out of New York. I wanted to see other things. I wanted to experience other things. I'm a native to the Bronx. I went to high school in Manhattan, been here all my life pretty much. And I wanted to express something else and see something else. Up until that point, I was the only female, still am the only female in my family to join the military. All of my uncles served in some capacity between the Air Force and the Army and everything like that. And I have a cousin in the Navy. So when I turned around and said, I joined, it wasn't I'm joining. I told them after I kind of did the first oath and took the test and passed the everything. They were like, what do you mean? My uncle's like, what do you mean? Aren't you going to be a model? I was like, no, I'm joined the Air Force. They said, well, you got to take a test. I passed it. But what about your physical? I passed that too. When do you leave? May 3rd. It was like April 17th. We had that conversation and they all looked at my mother like, yeah, that's exactly what she did 2 weeks ago. They all kind of looked at me like I had lost my ever-loving mind, because, you know, I've always been creative and things like that. And I just went in this completely different direction than anybody thought that I would ever do.
Do you feel the opposition or from your male family members? Was it genuine concern, or was it because they thought you may have had a different plan for your life?
As for the opposition, my mom wasn't happy. She did not want me to join anything, period. I'm the only girl, only child, only baby. And she said, well, maybe you can get one of those nice jobs with the blue uniform, you know, just in my blues. I said, oh, okay. And then I came back and I was like, I'm gonna be security forces. She was like, what is that? And my dad, who was an Army vet, he goes, she's gonna be a cop. He gave me the biggest high five and hug. And she looked at him like, why are you accepting this? My uncles was just like, yeah, that's dope. What? You're doing what? So this, not only is she joining, but she's joining at that time in 2000 was pretty much, you know, the biggest badassery job that you could have in the United States Air Force as a woman. And I'm looking at them like, yeah, this 5'10" size 2 chick is about to carry a bigger weapon than you ever did, you know? So no, they were actually, the guys were very supportive. My mom was very scared, as mommies do. So I get it. It wasn't going to stop me, obviously, but I definitely get it. My mother told me no a lot when I was growing up. And I just took it as, she just doesn't want me to do it that way. Let me find another way. And I still have that mentality. I had my daughter in 2004. I was pregnant during my service with her. I had gotten out November 1st. She was born November 10th. And I rejoined end of July the following year. My last deployment, when I was eligible to deploy, she was 2.5 when I left, and she was 3 years old when I came back. So I have a lot of mommy time and a lot of deployment, you know, military time as a mom. And I will say that being deployed and away from her was unlike any other experience that I've ever had in any previous deployment, even though technically the previous deployments were harder living situations, bare base, dirty, blah, blah. But being away from her was an issue. I was gone for 7 months of my kid's life. I couldn't see her, you know, things like that. So psychologically and emotionally, it was a harder deployment, even though the living environment was easier and it was nicer. I had a bed. It was in a cot. We're still brushing our teeth with water, though. That never stopped. But I'm a mom now. Nobody ever wants to leave their family, you know, aside for like a week vacation just to clear your mind. But imagine 7 months. There was another airman with me at the time. I was an NCO. She was a young airman, and her baby was 6 months when she left. She came back home. Her daughter was a year and a month. And I did my best to attempt to prepare her. Your daughter might not know who you are. I call her every time that I can. Your daughter might not know who you are. 7 months. We lived in the same little square with four bunk beds. Your daughter might not know who you are. And we got off that bus, and her daughter did not know who she was. And she went in the bathroom and had a nervous breakdown. I got on the floor with her and let her cry in my lap. There wasn't many women in my unit, and the commander was a female. She got on the floor with us. I don't know how to console this woman. I tried to tell her, your baby might not know who you are. You left when she was very young. She's going to know. She's going to send her pictures. And I talk. When I finally did see my daughter, she was 3. I saw her in the airport, and it was kind of like, you know, you see the kid and you see the parent literally running to each other in the middle. I was so happy that she knew who I was. I just wanted her to know who I was. And she knew. Mom. And she just took off running. She always carried a blankie. Blankie was dropped. She took the thumb out of her mouth and she started booking towards me. And it was the greatest feeling because I saw a mother break down and held her while she cried and washed her face and got her uniform nice and back together as if nothing happened in that bathroom so she could try to learn how to have a relationship with her daughter. It's hard. When I came back, my daughter woke me up for 3 months at 2 a.m. and said, Mom, are you going to leave me again? Are you still here? Every night for 3 months. And then one day she slept through the night. And then I didn't wake up. You know, I woke up like, oh my goodness, where she at? Because she didn't wake me up. So for another 2 months, I wasn't sleeping, expecting her to wake me up. And then I would run in her room like, okay, wait, I think she's acclimated. Maybe I should get acclimated too. Now that she's 15, because she's 15 now and I've been out and things, and she's just like, you know, yeah, it's just kind of like it was your job and you had to leave for a while, but you came back. She just kind of, I guess she just looks at it as like a proud moment. Mommy had a job to do and she did it well. So, yeah, she just looks at it that time period that mommy had a really important job and it took her away from me, but it brought her back. If she, for some reason, wants to join, for whatever reason, join, but we will have a very blatant, honest, candid conversation. These are the things that may happen, even though I joined at that point, you know, it would have been years and years back, but these are some things, residual effects that may have, you know, still be in the service today. So these are the pros and cons, but I can't tell her no or yes. She has my 1,000,000 whatever percent of life to do whatever she wants to do with her life because she is her own person and she's about just as headstrong as I am, so I wouldn't be able to tell her nothing away.
I joined the military in 2000, right before the whole 9/11 situation happened, which was in 2001. Got deployed on the Harry S. Truman. I was part of the Navy.
This is Martine DeVos, Navy veteran, DVS employee.
My career plan was to pursue becoming an officer. But that kind of got stopped short after having my son and the complications that he had. I was still enlisted. My son passed away March 9th, 2004. He was only 11 days old, so he was born February 27th, 2004. I went into labor, and due to his defect, I had to have a C-section. I was misdiagnosed on the first trial, and later they found out that he had an infalocele where all his intestines, his liver, and his stomach was covered with a membrane. I tried to get him into a different NICU unit, Children's Hospital out in VA, but the death would have happened, but I probably just would have prolonged it, probably like another week or two. It was tough, you know. It was tough. You know, it was a lot of things that I didn't get to experience with him. You know, just to get to hold him or breastfeed him. Things like that that some people may not even think about, you know, after they have a child. Those precious moments, you know. And not being able to save him, despite everything that I tried to do. Right after when my son passed away, I spent like probably like 4 months. I didn't go back to work. It's crazy because the military didn't even know I wasn't there. Nobody came to look for me. I would spend most of my time sleeping, not doing anything. Then at one point I started obsessing over about my weight, how I looked. I felt very unattractive. When I went to work, I didn't want to be at work. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't socialize with anybody. I kind of isolated myself and just kind of stayed away from everybody. I did my job, but then, you know, after that, I just went home. There was no emotional support in the military. You know, you still had to get up at 6 o'clock and go muster. You still had to do your job as regular. You know, nobody really asked about how I was doing, how I was feeling. Like, they knew that my son passed away, but nobody really talked about it. Nobody, leadership especially, never pulled me aside and asked me, how am I coping? You know, here are some resources that, you know, that may help you with bereavement. You know, it was more like, okay, you need to get this task done and just get it done. So that's what I did. So when I got out the military, it wasn't that I got out the military because I was ready to get out the military, but I felt embarrassed when my son passed away and there was nothing I could do about it. And constantly, you know, when I did return back to work, hearing everybody ask me, oh, how's your son doing? How's your son doing? And constantly have to tell them, well, he died. And just constantly hearing, you know, the feedback that you get when you tell somebody that your child passed away. And as a parent, you never think about burying your child. You always think that your child will bury you. So that's part of the reason why I actually got out the military. If everything would have worked out, I'd probably still be in the military full time as an active duty. And who knows, I could have been an officer. So when I transitioned out, I didn't come straight back home to New York. I stayed in Virginia for a while because at the time I was married to my son's father. You know, just trying to figure things out between me and him. And then we ended up getting a divorce. We were separated for some time. We got a divorce. And then I decided to move to New York. My transition was tough, especially with the VA. They didn't have a lot of women's specialties, so to say. So things that, you know, you would think they have women veterans, you know, they didn't have a GYN clinic. They didn't have a mental health specifically for female veterans who might have been a victim of military sexual trauma. None of that stuff was available. And plus the trauma that I experienced, I didn't have somebody I could really talk to about it. You know, out of my peers, all my peers, you know, some of us were pregnant around the same time. Their children are still there, you know, running around, playing, and meanwhile, you know, I had to go see mine, you know, at the cemetery, at his gravesite. You know, it's funny because when you're young, you know, like in your 20s, a lot of these experiences you're not even thinking that you'll go through. And then when you go through it, you don't even know how you feel talking to somebody who's a peer about these experiences because they may not even understand how you feel, you know, deep down inside. It was hard to be part of a community. Or even if you were in the community, there was always a part of you that was never really present in the community. It may not have seemed so on the outside, but in the inside, you know, I was really depressed. I wasn't happy. But because I was in the military, you know, you do pick up some good habits from the military. You learn that, you know, you still have to take care of business regardless what you're going through, whatever the trauma it is that you're going through, you still have to take care of business. I mean, I guess that's part of the reason why you see a lot of military personnel as well. Even though, like, they have some mental health issues or they have other issues, other underlying issues that you can't really see, but you could kind of tell there's something not 100%, you know, with them, they're still high functioning in society. So they'll still get the job done, but it's that time when they're by themselves. That's the time that's more crucial. You have to pay attention to that because you don't know where their mind is taking them and what they're feeling and how they're coping with some of the issues that they're not talking about. So when I started DVS, every time I would come to work, I would keep my coat on. And one day one of my colleagues asked me, you know, are you cold? And I was like, no. They're like, oh, are you about to go out? I was like, no. And then they asked me, so why do you have your coat on? And I didn't know, like, by me having my coat on, it symbolizes that I didn't want to be a part of the community. So I was ready to go at any given moment because I was on the ready, which is an expression used in the military. Like, you always have to be ready for whatever happens. So I guess that was part of the isolation that I was doing that others noticed, but I didn't really see it as isolation because I'm so used to being isolated. I actually went back to the VA because remember when I got out in 2004, they didn't have any of those specialties for women. They started creating those specialties probably like 2011, I would say, that I started knowing about these services and that mental health is a real thing, depression is a real thing, anxiety is a real thing. By going to therapy, you know, I would talk to my therapist. And she kind of got me to see things in a different angle and helped me realize some of the things I was going through was normal. It's the normal bereavement process. I'm just happy that now that the VA has opened more opportunity for women so that they could have a place to talk about bereavement at any level, whether it may be your own child or somebody that you served with or even a family member.
Thank you for listening to Sit Rep NYC. This episode was produced by Gil Feliciano and myself, Monique Johnson. This episode has been edited by Gil Feliciano.